Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast, your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and I'm so excited to introduce our guest for today's episode, Dr. Amelia Kelly. Dr. Amelia Kelly is a trauma-informed therapist and meditation and yoga teacher. She is a presenter and writer in the science help field, focusing on relationships, highly sensitive persons, motivation, healthy living, and adult ADHD. She is a resident trainer for the North Carolina Art Therapy Institute, and her practice is currently part of the Traumatic Stress Research Consortium at the Kinsey Institute. She came onto the show in episode 92 to talk about recognizing emotional abuse based on her book, What I Wish I Knew, Surviving and Thriving After an Abusive Relationship. And she came back onto the show to talk about her newest book, Gaslighting Recovery for Women, The Complete Guide to Recognizing Manipulation and Achieving Freedom from Emotional Abuse. So if you've ever wondered just what gaslighting is all about, how to become aware of it, how to prevent it, how to stop it, then this is the episode for you. Without further ado, let's begin. Hello, Dr. Amelia Kelly. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a while. I'm glad to see you.
Yeah, how are you today?
I'm good. I've got one of those days where as a highly sensitive person, you're changing gears a lot. So it's been exciting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Well, I hope now we're shifting into a podcast interview gear over here.
Pod mode.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. I know you have lots of clients that are all so lucky to have you. And I really enjoyed our first conversation. So I'm super excited to continue it. And interestingly enough, our last episode with you was on recognizing emotional abuse. And today we're talking about another particular type of emotional abuse. So I have to ask, you know, what's it like focusing on what some might call the worst aspects of loving relationships? And do you feel, you know, disillusioned at the state of love? Have you lost faith in love as a result of all the toxic relationships that you've seen?
Oh, I love that question. You know, I think the way that I look at it is from an empowerment stance. So I don't think I've lost hope. I think I really am locked into when someone comes in my room, actually just today, and they're unpacking an unhealthy relationship and we're realizing that it is gaslighting or whatever form of emotional abuse, I get really excited for their next steps and for the next part of their chapters to unfold. So I think because I look at it from an empowerment stance, I don't get disenchanted by it, if that makes sense. You know, the more knowledge we have about healthy relationships, about what we deserve, about identifying what we don't deserve, I actually think it leads more people to loving relationships the more that they know. So I really feel empowered by this. And I feel excited when I can help someone find themselves again, when maybe they have been, you know, kind of sucked in or confused by something that they do not and should not have to put up with. So I find it inspiring, honestly.
Yeah, it's so interesting. We just recorded a podcast along the lines of solving healthy conflict. And I asked my guest, she was saying how every problem can be solved. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is there any like big deal breaker, big ultimatums that you're like, these two people should not be together? And one of the things she said was, yes, in the case of abuse, the relationship needs to end, needs to kind of separate. So would you concur with that, that abuse means like this relationship, we need to keep them separate, keep them apart, and then I need to work on, say, the abuser separately? Or is it even possible for a relationship where at one point some form of abuse is happening for both partners to work through it together and be stronger afterwards?
I think it depends on whether the person who is being abusive, and I'm using this loosely because there are certain forms of abuse that if you are in danger, if you are being hyper-controlled, if you don't have agency over yourself and your safety, you should not participate in the healing process for the abuser. Mm. They, in my opinion, should be doing that work singularly and doing that work for themselves. And I have to admit, I don't see it commonly where if someone is abusive within a relationship, that they're going to heal and change course enough within that relationship. Sometimes it demands that the abuser has to be without that connection and they have to figure themselves out completely on their own. Mm-hmm. Let's say, however, there is remorse, there is responsibility being taken, there is interest in learning and growing, and the person who is being toxic, I don't even want to use the word abusive in this situation, the person who's being toxic is willing to do work and not displacing blame onto the other person, I think there's some room for working together. Mm. But I think what your past guest was probably also speaking of is the duty that we have as helpers and specifically clinicians not to create an environment that supports abuse. Because if you continue working with a couple and there's abuse happening, you can sometimes be giving a forum to the abusive partner to carry out their tactics, which is incredibly dangerous and unhealthy.
So that's so interesting because, as I mentioned before we started recording, I'm in my own therapy school right now. And something we've talked about is how hard it is to get certain people to come into the therapy office, including, for example, like narcissists, for example, who think that they're just the smartest person in the room and there's no work they need to do in themselves. So, you know, how easy is it to get somebody who might be an abuser into your office to begin to work on themselves, to convince them that there is something that they need to work on?
You know, I've noticed that those who maybe have personality disorder issues or different abuse patterns will generally enter therapy for a different topic. Maybe they're coming in because of substance abuse or because particular issues with work or relationships, but I don't think it's as typical that I'm going to see one of them walk through my door and say, you know, I think I'm a narcissist. not super common. I will say I had one submission form come through where someone had read my first book, What I Wish I Knew, and self-proclaimed that that's what they were struggling with. And it was amazing to get a request like that. Mm. So it's not, it's uncommon enough that it stood out to me.
Okay. So let's get right into today's topic, which is all about gaslighting and recovering from gaslighting. So let's first cover what it is, why it's become kind of a big thing, how to recognize it, and then how to recover from it. So for those who have never heard this term before, what is gaslighting?
Gaslighting is a form of emotional manipulation, which is what we were chatting about, that is intended to confuse or disarm the ego strengths of the other person, trying to cause self-doubt, trying to essentially control them. The whole purpose is to gain control over another person. And this does not just show up in romantic relationships. I'm sure we'll touch on this through our chat, but it can show up in institutional ways. It can show up in marginalized ways. It can show up in professional ways and in the medical arena. And so when we say it's a new thing, word of the year last year, because it had peaked so many searches online. Really, I think we just finally have the right scenario in society where we've seen enough of this publicly that we're taking a term that actually came from a play set in London about 80 years ago that turned into an award-winning movie that's where the term came from, was the play Gaslight. But it's something that it's a term that was used to describe behavior that really has existed since humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's just we finally have a way to identify it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that it had been turned into a movie. What's the award-winning movie called?
I want to say Gaslight.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Ingrid Bergman or so. I'm probably missaying her name. But yeah, it was in the 40s.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look that up. We can put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I wanted to ask you about, is why it's sort of become a thing. Like, I feel like 5 years ago, I had never heard of this term.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't definitely use it that much. And now I feel like people use it all the time, both as like jokes and then also as like, I don't know if it's pejoratively, but like you'll see a headline that says politician gaslights entire nation. And
I know, like, who you're talking about.
Well, yeah, well, it's interesting because I was like, oh, yeah, back in the day, we might use the terms like propaganda or lying or different things like this. But when I see headlines like that, I do wonder, like, is that the correct use of this term?
Mm-hmm.
And by using it incorrectly, is it losing its original meaning?
Mm-hmm.
But like, again, what do you ascribe to the rise of this concept?
I holistically believe that what happened in politics was a big reason why it became so widely spread, because this term was starting to be used more readily in the clinical world, I want to say 4 to 5 years before that.
Okay.
But it wasn't until The Nation was so very obviously a target.
Mm.
I think the confusion that it caused, the is this for real moments. I think as humans, we have a desire and a tendency to look for the reason that things happen. And I think identifying and giving a name to what we were all feeling became so important.
Mm.
And this also happened on the heels of the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you have to imagine how much gaslighting had to happen to terrify so many women not to prosecute or come out or label the people who hurt them or abused them. And then also the Black Lives Matter movement. So we have racialized gaslighting and kind of those covert forms of gaslighting. So you had this perfect storm of all these people saying, wait a minute, my reality is different than what I've been having shoveled at me.
So I'm curious if you just have sort of like a classic example or like gaslighting prototype that.
Well, I can actually tell you about a time I was professionally gaslit, because it was
okay.
It happened to me. And I've wrote the book on it. And so I had a client that I've been working with for years. I know her very well. She had gone to a local university here to get some vocational counseling, kind of like school counseling type style, what to do with her internship. She went to the school counselor and asked, is it okay if I, you know, take a different job? I got a better opportunity that's actually paying me fairly. She's in engineering, which is not always paying women as fairly as they should. So this was important to her. The counselor that she was working with looked her dead in the eye and said, you really need to think about the school and whether or not you're going to be making a good reflection on us before you make this decision. Exactly. That is completely inappropriate. It's breaking so many ethical boundaries that I was floored, and I wanted to stand up for my client. So with her permission, I called the counseling center at this university, which I will remain unnamed, and said, can I please speak to the supervisor and express my concern about what happened with this counselor? So I shared what happened, and his response, he said to me, don't you realize that you have to take everything your clients say with a grain of salt? Do you really believe everything your clients tell you? And you know what happened in that very moment? I didn't doubt my client. And I felt this lurch in my stomach. Like, I felt sick to my stomach to be so devalued, in my opinion, and my concern for my client. And so I said to him, I said, with all due respect, I've known this client for nearly 5 years, and I'm concerned for her, and I don't really see a reason why she would have fabricated that. And then he took it a step further. He said, oh, wow, 5 years. So you've been working for a while. I've been working much longer, but he said, you've been working for a while. I'd imagine you'd have better insight about this kind of thing.
Wow.
So that, folks, is gaslighting. Because he was trying to make me doubt myself, and he was completely disregarding.
Shooting out of your ears.
Oh, my gosh. He was completely disregarding my concern. He wasn't admitting or taking responsibility. Even as the supervisor, he could have just said, you know, I will bring this to this person's attention, something. But his need to control the conversation, his need not to be wrong, was greater than his need to take ownership. So that's one example that I personally experienced.
Well, I'm saving this question for later, but now we got to get into what should we do if we realize that we are being gaslighted, if we feel like somebody is, voiding our reality. What's the next step?
Well, you know, the very first step is realizing it's happening. And I know this might seem kind of like a typical thing in counseling, therapy, self-help, you always want to label what is occurring. But with gaslighting, it's incredibly important. And the reason being, gaslighting only survives when it's not detected. So if you can identify by, say, listening to a podcast and learning about it, or reading a book or reading an article, if you can identify that it's occurring, you have more power. The next step is processing. So I find it very important to process with another person that you feel safe with to regain a sense of certainty and insight in that moment. So I got right back on my phone. And I called my husband and said, you will not believe what just happened. And I told him, because I felt like I needed someone else to say, yeah, that was not okay. Now, if that doesn't always happen for everyone, let's say you're in a work environment and you feel bullied, or you are in a family dynamic where you don't feel safe talking to anyone. In those scenarios, you know, creating distance in whatever way you can from the gaslighting is going to be most important. And this gets really hard. You know, imagine you're a child and you have a gaslighting parent. I mean, that is so tricky. And so, you know, there's been times where I've worked with teens. I don't work with young kids that much anymore, but I've worked with teens in those scenarios. And so the biggest thing is to regain their sense of self, self-awareness, self-identity, keep their inner voice loud so that they're not looking to this gaslighter to give them their sense of identity and reality. The gaslighter will never let you know what is really going on. And, you know, in that scenario with that teen, I remember saying to her, you know, you've got a year and a half till you get out of the house. I am so sorry you can't get away from your gaslighting parent. But let's think of ways you can get out of the house that they're going to be okay with. So we worked really hard on her getting a job and her getting to spend time with friends. And the more time you have with other healthier energies and other ways to build your inner ego and ability to know yourself, the more important. I will say one other thing. Sometimes reporting is necessary. So if it is safe and if you feel that it is okay, that is totally okay and totally appropriate.
Like reporting, like, say, child abuse, if you feel like, when you say reporting?
So many different ways. I mean, for instance, I went above that guy. So, right. So I contacted his boss and let them know what was going on. I don't know what they did with it beyond that. I let it go because luckily I don't work there. But if, say, you're in a relationship and you feel unsafe, it's sometimes you might even need to collect facts that you've experienced. In my book, I have an exercise of fact tracking where you're writing down what happened, how you felt, what they said, what you feel really happened. It's a shame that we even have to think of doing this, but sometimes that's how confusing gaslighting can be. If you don't have the facts in front of you, it's very easy to get confused. And this is more insidious, long-term gaslighting.
Yeah. No, I love so much of everything that you are saying, especially like how you said, gaslighting only survives when it's not detected. So mm-hmm. that awareness of what it is so key. And the importance of processing. And I love that because I just love love and how healing relationships can be. Mm-hmm. So the importance of speaking with somebody, whether it's your therapist or a dear friend or somebody that you can check these facts with and check your reality right. with and realize, yeah, I'm not crazy, actually.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it also reminds me of that's I feel like that's also kind of a form of emotional abuse or a way gaslighters sort of perpetuate their abuse is through isolation.
Absolutely.
Like they'll be like, oh, don't talk to your friend. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And mm-hmm. I'm also like drawing an analogy to that towards even like cults. Like when cults start their own little segment, they're like, don't trust society. Don't trust what they're telling you. Only trust what we're telling you.
Yes. Yes. If someone does not encourage you to have that big, full, beautiful life that you want, if they want to be your sole source for things, that's a red flag. I mean, that's something to look towards. And that's not to say everyone is an extrovert and needs a million relationships. But if you have a valued relationship and you know that that person is a safe space for you and the individual you are being gaslit by tries to vilify that person or cut you off, that is definitely a red flag.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love that. Love is when somebody encourages you to have the biggest, best, and most beautiful life.
Yes.
I love that. So we got to talk a little bit about what isn't gaslighting or what people tend to conflate gaslighting with, because I'm thinking of a number of things. One is just a difference of opinions. You know, someone's like, I love that movie. And the other one's like, that movie was trash. Right? you know, another one might be political opinions. I'm also thinking about just recollection of events, like mm-hmm. with, you know, a parent and child, like the parent might be like, no, you were like this. As a kid, and like, how do we know whether trying to like recollect the same event differently is gaslighting versus it's not? So what are some common examples of things that aren't really gaslighting and are just normal differences of perspective and opinion and political views?
Well, you actually answered your question, which I love and is one of the reasons I love talking to you so much because of the way you think deeply about things.
Oh, thank you.
But to spring off of those examples, if it feels like the person is misremembering something because they're trying to change your perspective or they're trying to control how you're seeing something, that's a little bit more of, you know, an indicator that it could be gaslighting versus just having a different filter system. If you and the other person see the world differently, we all see the world differently. We all have different perspectives. Right. And part of loving someone is understanding that the way I see something and feel something is going to differ from how you see and feel something. But I think the biggest thing is the intention. I mean, if the intention is to control someone, if the intention is to weaken someone or disconnect them from their self, that's going to be more of an indication. But conflict, different memory, different perspectives, different preferences, different opinions, not gaslighting. You know, I don't know if you admit that you watch any reality TV, but I do. And just a couple. I'm more into like the dating shows. And
it's research. It's research.
You're just exactly.
Seeing how modern relationships
exactly.
are.
But there's been times where I've seen people have conflict on these shows and they will sling the word gaslighting at the other person.
Right.
And I just want to climb through the screen and be like, no, no, we don't want to weaken this powerful word. We want to use it appropriately.
Right. Yeah. When people do label things incorrectly, it mm-hmm. really muddies the waters into what actually is and isn't gaslighting.
Right. And I think it's important to understand someone can be toxic and not be a gaslighter.
Well, yeah. Yeah. All gaslighting is toxic, but not all toxic behavior is gaslighting.
100%.
So your book is actually Gaslighting Recovery for Women. So let's talk about that real quick. Why focus on women in particular?
First of all, gaslighting can happen to anyone. I want to really impress that and say that even if you're not a woman, you could benefit from the skills in the book and the information. But it was really important to me to highlight I hate to say a vulnerable group, but a vulnerable group. And I don't mean we're vulnerable because women are powerful, but we have been targeted by systems for centuries. If anything, the word hysterical comes from a form of medical gaslighting towards women. So I don't know if you've heard or if, you know, listeners heard, but hysteria is a term that was used to identify, and you've maybe heard this, any sort of medical ailment that was remotely connected to the woman's reproductive system. And many of the times where maybe they actually had, you know, a mental health issue or some other medical concern, they would just be labeled as hysterical. Which then think about the term hysterectomy. I mean, think about it, it's all so connected.
Right.
And so I thought it was very important to look at some of the unique ways that women can be impacted. I also tried to touch upon how women of color can also be impacted in specific ways that, you know, not all of us can understand, of course, because if you can see that it's in order to sustain a system that is meant to control them, it's empowering, and it speaks to that very first question you asked me, like, do I still have hope for relationships? And I have hope that women are going to continue to speak up, be heard, be present, and not be taken advantage of. And so that's what the purpose of focusing with this book on women was for.
Well, that's what I thought of earlier when you did mention it can be institutional, is if someone says, oh, this situation I experienced was misogyny or was sexist or was patriarchy, or you mentioned people of color, and we have that same sort of denial, like, oh, this experience I had was based in racism. And people will often respond, oh, that's not true. And I was like, I feel like that's also its own form of sort of gaslighting and really diminishing someone's real perspective and experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you bring a concern to someone because maybe you felt like you were either targeted because of, like you were saying, gender or race or sexuality or anything along those lines, and it's minimized, and if anything, you're made to feel like you're being, quote, hysterical or being too emotional or it's not a big deal, these are forms of gaslighting.
Absolutely. So before we talk about recovery, I just want to make sure that we've fully given guidance on how to escape from it. Because earlier you mentioned we want to first become aware, then process it with somebody, and then most, if not all the time, create some sense of distance, create some distance to really put our reality back together. Is there more? Is there another step? Or does that cover it?
Oh, no. I mean, think about it this way. One of the most important parts of recovering from gaslighting and hopefully preventing, and I want to preface that, like I said, I wrote a book on it and I was still gaslit, okay? So it doesn't mean that just It doesn't mean that just because you do these things, you're foolproof, but it can help protect you from ongoing relationships where you would be gaslit. The next step is that really, really beautiful, intentional self-love and connection with the self in any way that speaks to you, that makes your voice louder, makes you more connected. So in the book, I offer all these different ways to, you know, do journaling or art therapy or breath work or even a self-love yoga sequence, which I'm sure yes. is right up your alley. It's short, but we don't want to, when you're feeling really stressed, you want to have, you know, what, 5 or 6 postures, but, you know, take a little time in each one, settle in, breathe. But I think one of the things, a client of mine that I was speaking to recently, where we're trying to help her leave a gaslighting relationship, I asked what her main goal was. And she said, I just want to feel connected to myself. And she needs that in order to feel like it's okay to leave this relationship. And so we're working on fortifying her self-identity. And one of my favorite ways to do that, in addition to all of these self-care techniques, let's start a movement of being compassionate and empathic, but disagreeable. It's okay to be disagreeable. It's okay to be emotionally independent have your own opinions, not like the same music, not want to see the same movie, have different affiliations. And this starts, when we think of romance, this starts on a first date. You know, we don't want to be emotional chameleons where we're trying to mold and shape to other people. We want to be so unique, because if you're unique, you're more in touch with that inner voice and you'll be able to more identify when you're being gaslit.
Work on fortifying our self-identity. Also by being compassionate, empathetic, and disagreeable. I love that. I mean, disagreeable, like we think of it as a bad term, but when we have firm boundaries, right, and we know who we are and we know what we want, there's going to be differences of opinion.
Absolutely.
So I'd love to hear more about this path of recovery, and particularly almost like, I know everyone's unique and everyone's situation is unique, but kind of like a general timeline that someone might expect. Like if I'm, let's say I've been in a relationship for 5 years that has really, and I've just now read the book. You know, how long might it take, and what might it look like to begin to put the pieces back together?
I think time is relevant in these situations, because there's really, in my opinion, no kind of finish line where you run over the tape, it breaks, and you're like, that's it, I'm healed. I think it's a continued dedication. I think it's a dedication to yourself. So what I've seen, I mean, if you look at research when it comes to complex PTSD, on average, folks are in therapy, and this might sound like a lot, but folks are in therapy for 3 to 5 years on average to overcome interpersonal trauma, complex trauma. And this is a form of complex trauma. But what does that look like? That doesn't mean that you're not healing along the way. That doesn't mean that big changes aren't happening the entire time. But it does mean to be really patient with yourself. And I wouldn't press the timeline, honestly. I would look at every little effort as those moments of growth. Because let's be honest, even if you're not recovering from gaslighting, I feel like we're all recovering from something all the time.
Yeah. Or like we're all growing and learning.
Exactly.
And expanding. Yeah. Yeah, you answered definitely one of my questions, because I was wondering, is gaslighting traumatic? Like, would we put it in the category of a traumatic experience and thus have the same recovery process that a lot of other trauma does?
The answer would absolutely be yes, but to what degree, I believe, depends on whether you are able to reestablish safety and complete the trauma cycle. So when we look at a trauma cycle from a somatic standpoint, you can think of standing up on top of a high dive and plunging in. That's actually trauma. That's a little trauma. You cut through the water. This is based on Levine's work. You cut through the water, you surface, you take that big breath, done. Trauma cycle's over. You're okay. You swim out of the pool. But that doesn't always happen with interpersonal traumas. So when we look at that example I had given, I hung up the phone, I called someone, I reestablished a sense of safety, I spoke to someone above and reported, I made the decision to cut a boundary. I don't have to be in that dynamic. So it's not going to cause trauma, because I was able to put a like a finish to that. But folks who don't have that choice and who are perpetually gaslit, it can be much more traumatizing.
Yeah, I really feel that empowerment piece that you mentioned towards the beginning. You have the experience and then it's like, no, this is ridiculous.
Yes.
I will not put up this with this behavior, and I'm going to tell your boss or do what I need to do or report it. Or if it's a closer situation, I'm going to set up these boundaries. I'm going to talk to a friend who's going to reaffirm my reality and that my perspective is valid. And it does feel like a very, I don't know, just like a very strong setting up of one's belief as valid and real.
And, you know, you just said something that made me wish I added something to my book.
Oh, no.
You said about, you know, no, this is not okay, and standing up. I think that's part of the recovery piece, too, is that if you weren't able to stand up to your gaslighter because mm-hmm. of a scenario, because of a dynamic, because of control, because of safety. Anytime you emotionally individuate or be disagreeable or stand up in other scenarios, you are doing healing work on that other relationship.
Mm.
So, man, I have to go back and do a second edition and add a whole paragraph about that.
No, I know how writing gets, you know, you're finished, but then when you're done, you're a different person. We can throw out any idea of victim blaming with my next follow-up question, because when you did mention, like, you know, a lot of it is the awareness and setting up boundaries. And I'm like, yeah, I feel like if you have poor boundaries, if you're always putting aside your own needs mm-hmm. to take care of your partner, it might be more conducive to being gaslit. So is there a way that someone can gaslight proof, so to speak, their life?
Well, the unfortunate part and what makes someone, I think, more susceptible is depending on your history, whether you were given that empowerment to be disagreeable, to individuate, to have your own opinion early on in your life, it can kind of mar your opinion on whether or not someone else has the right to tell you what to do going forward, and whether mm-hmm. or not you can have your own thoughts. And so it's really hard, but reparenting, rewiring, and choosing the opposite type of relationships. So this is where things like working on attachment is really important. That's why I think it's very important to be working with a therapist if that's something you're open to, mm-hmm. because being able to reflect back on maybe what set the stage for this, and or even reflect back on how maybe potentially you were love bombed into thinking this person was really healthy and wonderful and they were going to be the person. And then they slowly will start to gaslight. They will slowly do little tidbits of dishonesty to see what they can get away with. And then they'll double down a little more, and then they'll isolate. And then they'll go further and do things that are so incredulous that you can't even believe that they would not be telling the truth, because it would be ridiculous for them to lie.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So this mm-hmm. is the steps are gradual. And so the more you are your own individual from the very beginning of a relationship, the better off you will be in the long run.
I love that.
And I know that's hard for some people, especially based on history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we're winding down, I think you might remember I close all my podcasts with the question, what do you wish everyone knew about love? But because this topic is specifically gaslighting, I'll still finish with that last question. But I'm almost just wondering, what do you wish everyone knew about this idea of gaslighting? And I'll just also finish with a plug. I want to read the whole title, because your book is Gaslighting Recovery for Women, The Complete Guide to Recognizing Manipulation and Achieving Freedom from Emotional Abuse.
So it's a mouthful.
No, it's wonderful. So whether you suspect you're being gaslighted or simply want to gain awareness of what this idea is, definitely check out the book. And how might you summarize your thoughts and beliefs about gaslighting?
So to answer your question about what do I wish people really understood about this, I think I really wish that they understood they do not have to put up with it. And that it is not only is it not okay, but it is one of the most difficult to detect forms of manipulation. And if anyone you know and love comes to you and says, I think this might be happening, even if it is difficult to hear, I encourage you to take a couple steps back and look at the relationship and think about who is willing to be more vulnerable, because gaslighters tend to not do vulnerability very well. Mm-hmm. And so if the person who's coming to you is saying, you might want to look at this relationship, or you might want to look at this boss you have, or maybe get a new doctor, or get a second opinion. If someone that is willing to do vulnerability and is caring and comes to you with love, please listen to them and know that it's not a blame. This is not blaming, because no one who is targeted by gaslighters wants to be gaslit.
Yeah, just the importance of having that outside perspective, seems really key, both to bounce your ideas off of, but also to be like, yeah, you're that relationship, or like your boss is not treating you very well, can be really helpful. So if we're a concerned party, we can also read the book.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Let our friend know about the relationship that they're in. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Dr. Amelia Kelly, for coming onto the show. And I still have to finish with my favorite question, which is, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
I wish everyone knew that being in love with yourself is not selfish, and that boundaries and self-care actually make you better in relationships. Saying no is one of the most compassionate things you can say, because if someone says no when they mean no, you know that when they say yes, they mean yes.
I love it. Being in love with yourself is not selfish, and boundaries and self-care is so important even in our interpersonal relationships. Thank you so much, Kelly, for coming on to the show. And for our listeners who want to learn more about you, how can they find you?
Well, they can find me on Instagram at Dr. Amelia Kelly, and Kelly's with an EY. But then also my webpage, ameliakelly.com, I've got lots on there. I've got quizzes, meditations. There's going to be a book resource page with PDFs and other meditations coming soon in the next month or so. I try to really have it be kind of a one-stop shop for anyone who digests anything I put out into the world. And I've also got a blog on Psychology Today that I absolutely adore writing for. It's called In Your Corner. Mm. And then finally, an Insight Timer, some meditations on there, and a self-compassion course for overcoming stress.
Oh, cool. An Insight Timer?
Yeah. I love Insight Timer. It's such an amazing free resource.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
So you got some self-love meditations there.
Yes, I do. And some pain management and some sleep meditations, and just kind of, I started it for my clients because they got used to my voice and they wanted to do recordings. And I said, let me make a place for you to find them. And that's kind of where it started.
That's so wonderful. Well, it's so beautiful connecting with you again, Dr. Kelly. You're doing such amazing and very important work in the world. So I'm glad to hear that you haven't lost faith in love despite all that you have seen, and how empowering it is to have this knowledge about what makes love turn bad so that we can make sure all our love turns good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow. What an incredible interview. Thank you, listeners, so much for listening. I hope you remember all of the valuable lessons that Dr. Amelia Kelly shared with us today, including gaslighting is a form of emotional manipulation intended to confuse or disarm the ego strengths of another person. Gaslighting only survives when it's not detected. So knowing what it is will help us set up the appropriate boundaries to not letting it happen again. We can help get out of gaslighting by processing what has happened with somebody else to help us regain a sense of certainty in the moment, because the gaslighter will never tell us what exactly is going on. Love is someone wanting you to have a big, beautiful life, not putting you down. And we can practice being compassionate, empathetic, and disagreeable, because boundaries are such an important part of self-love. Anything that makes you feel more connected, find your voice, and speak your truth can help us all recover from gaslighting. And being in love with yourself is not selfish. And remember, you are perfect just the way you are. You are lovable, loving, and loved.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to zachbeach.com or theheartcenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.